working very long in the British Museum or wherever it was he was working, Aston and Co. raised their minds and said, no, they are indeed the same, but they are both worker states, both degenerated worker states, the deformed thing. And Cliff, initially, as he tells it, thought perhaps that's right, but then he pursued his investigations and came to the opposite conclusion. Now then, it was, therefore, the majority itself became divided. The people who agreed with Cliff were very much a minority within the majority. They didn't break with it. They didn't break with it, thought the argument would go on for an extended period and so on and so forth. Nevertheless, that was the first thing which was distinctive about the socialist, what became the socialist review tendency, as opposed to the majority. Because you'd never, the majority never accepted the economic idiocy, the catastrophe, Bonapartism, fascism next week, or anything of that sort. Okay? Why then did this lead to collapse? Because you have to draw, if you are serious, the conclusions from your analysis. This is why the international, Gallen, the American SWP, and the European acolytes fought to the bitter end to maintain the position Poland is capitalist, Russia is degenerated worker state. They had not got so careless as to call it socialist. After all, they had read the Revolution Detroit fairly recently. I doubt it. One of the recent acolytes of goodness at all. Now, on this question, in case people think I am mistaken, I am exaggerating, let me quote, I'll just give you two quick quotations on this thing. Both, not, they're written by Mandel, but not, I repeat, not Mandel's personal opinion, they are from the official positions of the FI, adopted by conference. These regimes were called buffer regimes, not for explaining the Red Army Crush, revolutionary movements, etc., etc., etc. And then it goes on to discuss what is the nature of this regime. There's the bourgeois character of the state in Poland, for example, quite the standard there. The bourgeois character of the state flows from capitalist relations of production. Yes. And is expressed in a special kind of state structure. This structure is hierarchical and centralized administration, apparatus of repression, etc. But hang on, industry is nationalized. I mean, isn't there a hierarchical, repressive state apparatus in the USSR? Yes. And industry is nationalizing. Nationalization, I quote, in no way changes the capitalist character of the buffer nation. In no way. I've added that second in no way. They merely in no way change the capitalist character of the buffer nation. They merely express in a new and concentrated form the total incapacity of native private capital in these countries to develop or even to run industry. Well now, let's take that seriously. If that is the case, actually, you can have the native bourgeoisie is incapable for this, that, or the other reason, and that can certainly happen. You can have a regime in which bureaucratic groups, call it whatever you have, state ownership of industry, subordination of the working class, and the relations of production, he says, are capitalist, they are wage labor, so on, and it is still a capitalist regime. That's what he said. That's what the World Congress Resolution said. Well, of course, they were right. Problem. Then why is not the USSR a capitalist regime? Because exactly the same argument, exactly the same criteria apply, don't they? Now, they get into this impossibly contradictory position and their arguments got more and more dishonest. This is why some of the older members of the organisation sometimes take a rather sharp, polemical tone, don't worry. In connection with these people. You see, the initial mistake anyone can make. Let's not be think we are so clever. Events are happening rapidly. We are all guided in our assessment of events by the past. Immediate or more remote, aren't we? So here is our criteria. The point is, however, when these contradictions become ever sharper,
you get a stone in one way or the other, or you lose your way entirely. That proves the RCP majority leadership. They rejected the notion. Obvious reasons that you can have this combination. They opted for your decision, then, of course, they went further. If you say that, then you cannot say in principle, I can remember Ted Grant arguing this with great fervor and enthusiasm. He always speaks with great fervor and enthusiasm. It's a little man, he's very eloquent then. You cannot say that in principle this could not happen in China. It hasn't yet, you see. Absolutely right. He was bang on. It did happen in China. You cannot say it can't happen here, there, and everywhere. You cannot say, in other words, that there is any necessary reason why the Stalinist regime should not transform increasing parts of the world. There can be contingent reasons. They can be beaten. They can be war and so on. You cannot say there is any necessary reason. Right? Well, that's a click D. But what's so special about Stalinism? Here we have in Britain a Labour government which has nationalised, and it had by 48, that was the big wave of nationalisation over, approximately one-fifth of the economy by the then Turks, right? Especially the size of the industries at that time. Can we say in principle that a Labour government, a radical Labour government, couldn't nationalise? Two-fifths? Two-fifths is more than Russia and the MEP. Can we say this in principle? No, we cannot say this in principle, comrades. Of course, it's not going to happen. They practically wouldn't do this and so on and so forth. But then in their heads, they thought, my God, it can. And therefore, not only the Stalinists, but the Labour Party, in the reality, Aspen, Grant, and the rest of them, Grant less so at that time, but collapsed into the notion that there is an agency other than working class struggle which can transform society. That's why the argument about Russia and Eastern Europe is important. Not the details of fifth analysis, even if the details of fifth analysis were wrong. I don't think they are. But even if they're wrong in detail, it doesn't matter. That's not really the significance of the thing. Consequently, we have the disintegration. And on the left, with, and I'll finish in a moment, well, I'll finish with this, just a moment and a couple of anecdotes, the situation that there was this little group. He held its first meeting, could have been Ireland at this time. He could have found it just to Britain at that time, at least until he must have done, because I remember seeing him. We had a meeting. Two of us came up from Manchester. The two in Manchester constituted the entire force of the organisation north of the Chess at that time. North of Birmingham, anyway. It was held in the autumn of 1950 in a bedsit near Mornington Crescent tube station. I remember it vividly. The bed occupied the greater part of the room. I argued to set up a group. Decided to set up a group and then failed to do it very consistently. At the point I'm making, and then there was a subsequent meeting, the next thing we set up the group which actually started to publish the Socialist Review. A duplicated sheet, by the way, a duplicated thing. I used to have copies of these things, and I'm afraid I've lost everything. I'll tell you one thing about it, just to show how orthodox we were. It was not very innovative, except in the specific question. We had on the front, stenciled, of course, the heads of Marx, Engels, Lenin, and Trotsky. And with this little sheet, we were launched on the world. The question is what to do. What to do? That the conventional accounts say there were about 20 people. My impression is there were rather more initially, because there was a core group in Birmingham, which later disintegrated, which at that time was the biggest Korean group in the organisation. There were a few people in North London, two in Manchester, one in somewhere else, I don't know. Now then, this little group, we had the activism of the RCP, but come on, the RCP to do it, at least they could produce a paper, which is tight with a fortnightly, and agitational, and so on, come on, don't be ridiculous.
You can't stand outside the factories selling melts over his venom and Trotsky and a duplicate sheet full of articles about the errors of Trotskyism and our analysis of the situation.
What?
There are people who try that. They're the most sensitive. Therefore, we said, we click that. Actually, because Click was the one who had a clear notion about it. We know that the Labour Party orientation is wrong for a revolutionary party. There's been an argument about it. The minorities have said we had to go into the Labour Party. And we did go into the Labour Party. So we went into the Labour Party. He did that. On the basis of that perspective. Economic ruin around the corner. The Labour Party will be radicalised. You must have heard some of these arguments in later manifestations. And then the workers will turn to the party that they know. The wards will be full of indignant workers. I remember the phrase very well, demanding a solution. We must be there, as well as secretaries, presumably, to take the leadership of this organisation. Now, because we rejected the economic perspective as bullshit, we didn't believe that. And therefore, it was a question of going into the Labour Party, not with joy and enthusiasm, and this is the road, but simply as a place to find a few people to talk to. I say the Labour Party. In practice, this meant the then Labour Party youth organisation, which they had devised in 1948, called the Labour League of Youth. It was never a mass organisation. I doubt it would ever have more than a few thousand members. But if we take the conventional figure, a few thousand for 20, that was the field of youth. And for a decade and a half, the organisation stayed in the Labour Party. Colin Barton will take up this story. I don't mean to go on about it. I just want to make two quick final points. The first is that when we emerged from this mess that the FI had then become, we turned our back on it. There were, after all, three fragments that emerged from the wreckage of the RCC. Keely's lot, maker of the Socialist Labour Party, WRP. Grant's lot, maker of the Militant Tendency. We turned our backs on the arguments with them and said, new people, forget it, you know? Those who haven't been, you know, haven't been shifted by the theoretical wreckage, the catastrophe of orthodox Trotskyism of a system, will never live physically, but they'll never live mentally again. Therefore, the future depends on new people, however you are. Secondly, on this final point, we know that a revolutionary party, a revolutionary organisation of any serious size, has to be concerned primarily with the actual class struggle, with the direct class struggle, with having orientation on the working class, with attempt to implant itself in the workplaces, etc., etc., etc. We know, we believe it, we can't do it. We are driven for a period into propaganda, not in the sense of, in a certain sense of emphasis now, because it's worth on it, but in the sense of me spending hours, days, and so on, trying to convince this character in the Labour League of Youth that actually Marxism is right. What's his right? There is no parliamentary road to socialism. In other words, we became engaged in that because of single jack agitation. We're out to win ones and twos. And the ones and twos were won, but also, ones and twos were lost, and more than that. After 10 years, the organisation had very roughly the same membership that it had in its year one, i.e. date of birth on the Chinese system. Without that period, which you might think wasted all this theoretical stuff and so forth, I tell you, the organisation would not exist today.
The orientation of the RCC and the Labour Party is two parts. First of all, during the war, it was a fact that the Labour Party went to sleep. The Labour Party went to sleep not the destruction of the war, some people say, the conscription, and so on and so on. You think that's in the past, or the communist party who were against the conscription, and not to the military, and so on and so forth. No. The Labour Party went to the liberation position. In 1940, the leaders of the Labour, Conservative and Liberal parties, who together formed the government, came to an agreement. And that agreement was, there will be no election. Local, or what have you, right? Except when a member of Parliament dies, in which case all three parties pledge themselves to vote for the nominee of the party of the deceased MP. Right? Which means that if the Tories have finished their position, the voters are called upon to vote Conservative. Or Conservative voters to vote Labour, etc., etc. And because the Labour Party is a football national organisation, in red colours, they always fight about who's going to be the candidate, working council elected for 10 years! And so on, and it's the organisation, which is what he said. I mean, very, very little. That's what, but it's not true, of course, that the RPG is going to be. See, not sectarian or the left. Oh, orientation. Central to their the general political argument was Labour's in power. They say, they stand for this, that, and the other, break the coalition, Labour's in power, and they stand on the following programme, which I think they're doing it for the left, because the programme was essentially a condensed version of the programme before the left. Yes, there was an orientation on the Labour Party in that sense. Absolutely. When the figures of people rose to go to the basically, here we go. That is what it's called. You look at it, what are the circumstances? You know, the argument crossed in 8th century in France and 34 and 2002. Korea, North and South are puppet regimes, pure and simple. I believe that this is absolutely true of the South. What we now have to say, what is the truth of the South? The real conflict is between the USSR and the US. This is our analysis of the USSR. It is truly true on both sides. Therefore, in prison, the rest of the British sent troops to Korea. Far, far more troops to Korea than ever sent to the Pulse. And altogether, 50,000 British servicemen serving Korea. That's quite a lot. A number of them were killed and bigger numbers wounded. We opposed the war. Down with the war, look at the socialist views of the time. What we did not do is add ancillary social taxes, which is exactly what, I mean, the paid government, even if it's not paid for social taxes, it is showing indistinguishable from the daily worker, which is the Communist Party today, you know? Total uncritical reproduction of whatever current propaganda line the North is going to have. Now, no, not that in line with their theory. No, Congress, it is not. I say, once you get into that theoretical position, you start feeling like it's not. Because what was their analysis of North Korea? It was, and of course, it left some challenges. It's very hard. If there are challenges, they are with the Sunday World Conference decision. It is that. But that was the analysis. Confirm they have, pretending to start with a little bit in the style, just have a World Congress. And that decision has been affirmed by World Congress decision. And it was added, what is our attitude towards them in the case of war? And this is how we did it. The British revolutionary defeated it. Just as it is, the British! Because they have become disoriented, they were pulled by the Stalinist gang. Not in Korea, but in France, the French Communist Party is big. The Cold War is at its height. Society is polarized. The working class movement is polarized. Even in Britain, between the Stalinists and the Labourites. And the Labour left, of course, supported British imperialism in Korea. Better than all. Right? There wasn't much space in between. It was actually rather hard to maintain a position of neither Moscow nor Washington. We did maintain. They saw the sentence you got out, and they chose not to.